Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to KFin Technologies Q3 FY25 earnings conference call hosted by IIFL Capital Services Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing the star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Devesh Agarwal from IIFL Capital Services Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Sid. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Q3 FY25 earnings call of KFin Technologies Limited. Today, from the company, we have with us Mr. Srikanth Nadella, MD and CEO, Mr. Vivek Mathur, CFO, and Mr. Amit Murarka, Head of Global Business Finance, M&A, and Investor Relations. I would now like to hand over the call to Mr. Srikanth for his opening remarks, which will be followed by a Q&A session. Thank you, and over to you, Srikanth.
Thank you so very much. Very good morning. Very welcome to one and all. This is the first call of the new year, so wishing all the participants a very happy new year as well. I couldn't be more thrilled to be able to announce our Q3 results, which continue to express the outcomes that we intend to deliver, which is a broad-based expansion of our businesses, profitable businesses, and ones which are sustainable. Our strategy for the last 5 years had been one that of diversifying risk while using that opportunity to expand our addressable market, which is, in some sense, on three axes. X-axis is increasing various different business services, not just RTA, but of an accountant, a data and a technology leadership roles, CRM, mobility solutions, cloud solutions, what have you. Second is to expand into every asset class in the asset management industry: mutual funds, alternatives, PMS, pensions, private retirement schemes, bond markets, what have you. Third, a geographical expansion, and not just a single country. We will always have cyclicalities in a single asset class in a single country, and hence our intent had been to look beyond borders, and since then, we had been one of the few market quasi-market intermediaries who have grown beyond borders. Financially, the numbers are out there in the market, so you would have seen it. Our revenue grew about 33% year-on-year, and same is the case with EBITDA and PAT numbers, roughly about 35%. We are satisfied with the results in the context of the mark-to-market gains being substantively low in the previous quarter and continues to be so. Mutual funds continues to be our dominant business, even as the other legs of businesses have been growing far faster, and we continue to track to the trajectory of getting the non-mutual fund businesses to be near about 50% over the next 3-5-year horizon. Our overall AUM, also in terms of market share, has grown as against a market expansion of 39.4%. We have grown about 42.8%. That's a good 300 basis points expansion in the overall AUM on a year-on-year basis. Same is the case on a sequential basis with a certain amount of expansion. But beyond what is more performance of our clients, our definitive performance largely in terms of winning additional contracts, Q3 had been a pretty consistent one for us. We won two large data lake contracts in the asset management space. That takes the total count to about eight, and this is a line of service which we are very, very keen to. It gives us, one, an opportunity to serve clients and generate direct revenue, and just as importantly, all of that expands their own revenue in the form of formidable analytics that they use to grow their expansion business, and hence, it kind of comes back to us as additional revenue eventually as well. We have had a terrific quarter in the corporate registry business. We have added close to 366 clients in the last quarter. In the 9 months of this year, that's roughly about 1,000-odd new client contracts we have added. The total folio count has expanded by about 8 million. You would have seen KFin Technologies rendering IPO services to several large ones. In fact, probably every large IPO or the largest five IPOs in the country have been handled by us, whether it was Hyundai or Bajaj Housing Finance and NTPC Green, what have you. We still have several large ones in the pipeline, and probably the next largest one that's going to go public would be LG and others. So that expansion, as well as the solutions we have created in corporate actions and corporate events, meant that revenue continues to chug along at a healthy 24% plus, on a sequential, sorry, on a year-on-year basis, and driving about 20% CAGR over the past 3 to 4 years. Moving along, international business, something that we're all excited, and I do recognize that. So are you to an extent. Our client base has increased to 70, even as the contract base has expanded to 90. In the quarter that had gone by, we have signed two full-service TA deals from a large asset management company and a trust, and these are based out of Philippines. We have also signed another large deal in Malaysia, and we have received two letters of intent, which are being in the process of being converted into letter of awards into the coming weeks. From a significant size custodian in Malaysia and another asset manager, in Malaysia again. Our share, market share in Malaysia at this moment in time surpasses over 50% in terms of total AMCs there. And as I said in the previous quarter, the deals that we have been signing off late are materially larger in size as compared to the erstwhile ones. And that is truly a symptom of a maturing maturing business, as well as the confidence that a particular country's ecosystem from a capital market standpoint gains in an administrator who does not necessarily belong to that country. And that level of confidence now is being exhibited in the countries of Philippines and in Thailand as well. Alternatives, another area of focus for us. As I mentioned, this is one of the three axes. The second one was the asset classes. Today, we manage about 535 funds, getting our market share closer to 37% in terms of the number of funds. The AUM growth has been substantive at about close to 55% year-on-year, bringing our total assets under management to over 1.4 trillion. We have been winning more than 60% plus in domestic market and about 3/4 of the funds in the GIFT City. And we continue to be probably the only player in the country who have a proprietary fit-for-purpose platform, a fully integrated transfer agency, and fund administration together, providing multi-currency, multi-asset, and multi-geography solutions. And that probably explains the win rate, not just in India and GIFT City and beyond borders as well. Continuing on the line of the asset classes, national pension system, a very important asset as well. I recognize the fact that it was not a substantive number in the overall scheme of things in the P&L. But I continue to maintain that over a period of time, this will be one of those businesses which could be providing a significant hedge against market movements. One, because of the stickiness. Two, because of non-linear relation to market movements. Very excited to tell you that we have grown three times faster than the industry average. Industry has grown at about 12%. We've grown about 35%. And this quarter also marks the break-even in this line of business, which means, into the coming quarters as the number of pensioners expand. And this particular quarter is always going to be the best quarter, the January, February, March for pensions. So we are excited in terms of what we can do in this space beyond what was done. So in a limited period of 4 years, we moved from 0% market share to now close to 10% market share, which was otherwise dominated pretty much in a monopolistic scenario prior to KFintech entering into the market. I'll quickly move and cover a little bit at individual business line level now. Mutual funds, clearly the largest of our asset, largest of our business, continue to perform very well in a year which probably is hard to replicate every year. I think overall industry has seen a tangible growth in this year, nearly about 35-odd%. And we have been growing slightly ahead of the industry with marginal gains in market share. Overall AUM has moved to now about 32.4%, hopefully in time to come to get to 1/3 and then expand from there on. And that is largely a combination of clearly our existing clients growing and the new client addition, and our contribution directly to help our clients grow in the form of technological solutions and the other value-added solutions we're able to provide at extremely compelling cost propositions. Our SIP book continues to be robust, close to 40% market share in that particular business transaction type. And I continue to maintain that SIP market share will be a good indicator in terms of where the overall AUM could be, given this is a sticky retail book. A lumpy one-off investments will come and go, but a retail sticky book, you know, has been expanding now close to $3 billion. If our market share there is about close to 40%, I'm hoping in time to come we will get that far in terms of our overall market share expanding there, as logic would suggest. Our net flows continue to be positive in the quarter ending December 2025. We got about 39% of the total net flows. This should be read in the context of the total market share of KFin being about 33%, 32.5%. But the net flows are at about 38.7% in that context. And obviously, we have orchestrated and supported a material number of NFOs. In fact, close to 57% of all NFOs that were launched in the previous quarter were handled by KFin Tech. The transaction volume continues to expand, which calls obviously for significant investments into our own technological infrastructure solutions, people, business process reorchestration, as well as the growing regulatory needs, not just in India, but across the globe. As I've already called out, we continue to work on the value-added solutions as probably the controllable side of income that we can work on, which is to get to provide large-scale engineering solutions, and some of them are our clients and some of them are not necessarily our current RTA clients. But in spite of that, we're able to add value for all and in the ecosystem. We have also started building a mobility platform for the industry body for mutual funds, and in the coming quarter, we should be able to go live and present that to you as well. Issuer solutions beyond mutual funds, as I've already called out, the expansion both in the number, in the form of number of clients and in the number of folios augurs very well. The retail democratization of participation into the India's growth story in capital markets continues to be a tailwind for us. We understand there are about 2,000 odd IPOs that are going to happen into the next 24 months. And our market share standing close to, in terms of market cap at about 50% today. We believe that we have commendable, opportunity to take a much larger market share than what we could in the past few quarters. And the win rate and the growth rate in the corporate registry had nearly doubled in the last two quarters as compared to the year before that. And that shows in the form of number of RTA mandates that we have won, which are yet to go live. And also the ones that have gone public in the last 1-2 quarters, one would have noticed a perceptible jump in the number of IPOs being managed by KFin Tech in that space. The folio count, aside the yield that we derive from at a folio level, continues to largely remain stable, though this is not related or linked to the market movements. But the yield can move and up and down depending upon which particular company has more retail participation versus participation coming down because of their own strong performance, what have you. On the international side, the deals that we won largely are some life of very large asset manager, a global asset manager, in fact, and in one of the largest in the Philippines. We have won the deals of not just the Sun Life as an AMC, but also Sun Life as a custodian and a trustee, which effectively means the contracts which that entity will get from other asset management companies will also be our clients. So the way to look at it is it isn't necessarily two contracts. It is two contracts, definitely, but then the number of asset management companies would be more than two as the AMCs who are under the trust corporation of Sun Life would eventually become our clients as we deliver the services to them. There are close to about nine asset management companies which are in transition of delivery. We have announced them in Q2 and some in Q1 and, of course, some of them now. As I said, it takes roughly about 2-3 quarters, depending upon the size and complexity of the contract, for us to be able to transition it. And hence the revenue for these 9 contracts is yet to be clocked, and all is well, hopefully, into the as we move into subsequent quarters. One of the biggest accomplishments we've had in the previous quarter was to sign with BlackRock, world's largest asset manager, to be in their list of marquee fund administrators, only 8, and we are the 9th one across the globe for implementation of Aladdin. There was a press release that happened. We are working with BlackRock as we speak in terms of the go-to-market strategy, in terms of, you know, how every geography, every client who is in their partner network, you know, how KFintech would tap into it. Whilst we have the overall process and comprehension, the very specifics the semantics of engaging with those fund managers is being discussed at this point in time. There would be more announcements to come into the coming quarter. But we are very, very excited in terms of the potential opportunity. Of course, the opportunity, mathematically speaking, is roughly about 108 odd funds, probably about $10 trillion worth of assets, and KFintech having an equal opportunity to potentially chase all of them. And it is really about our value proposition, and what is that we can offer is what's going to change it. But clearly, it's something that we're very, very excited about. It's an opportunity we've been working for nearly 18 months. It is a very complex process to be identified as one of their global marquee providers. I'll quickly move on. Beyond just the RTA, our acquisition of Hexagram, about two and a half years back, we got into that, as I said, to expand business services, not just RTA, but also fund administration, and that was going to be our segue into international fund solutions. Very happy to inform you about significant growth in the revenue and the contracts we are winning via Hexagram. Today we manage about 8 asset management companies or 8 AMCs in mutual funds use Empower platform. 60% of all pension fund managers and similar number in insurance companies today use Empower as a platform. Nearly every alternative fund that KFintech manages today uses Empower for fund administration, and then we continue to expand the use cases for that. That brings me to the next very, very important announcement we have already made, but that I'm very excited about, is our doubling down of commitment and effort into the wealth industry. In the month of October, we have launched Empower Wealth in the Hubis event in Mumbai. Very happy to inform you that in a matter of 3 months, we signed 5 large contracts in wealth and marquee names such as Tata Capital, Aditya Birla Wealth, NextEdge, Northern Arc, and several others in the pipeline. And this is an industry we believe will have a very important role to play as the affluence levels of individuals expand. I continue to believe in the trajectory of Indians being net borrowers to savers to investors now, which is largely where asset management companies come into play. But the affluent lot will need professional wealth management solutions. And we are bringing in same and better efficiency with much better technology as we are building it up bottom up without any legacy considerations. And that explains possibly the expansion into the wealth industry in a rather quick time of 95 contracts in a matter of a quarter since the launch of the new asset. And that is a global platform. And wealth as a solution, of course, is not as regulated as others are, as the classes. And we have built this bottom up to be relevant in every geography in the world. So as we move our international journey, we would be adding this solution along with our asset management solutions of transfer agency fund accounting and the big data solutions. I'll quickly move on into the younger and the faster businesses of the alternatives. I've already called out in terms of the number of AMCs, that number of funds that we have added in the quarter. Overall, AUM has increased by nearly 55% year-on-year. We manage about roughly 1.4 trillion rupees worth of assets, and some of it is only TA, and some of it is both TA and FA, and hence the yield we derive would not be same and consistent across each person, and that depends on the scope of the services we render. Fund administration, we have renewed a contract from our largest asset management company client on Empower, We have also recently signed with a very large insurance company, again, who would be leveraging the platform for fund accounting and administration in the insurance industry. Pensions have called out last few quarters, 2 quarters back, I think, you know, we were growing at 2 times the industry in the pensions. Again, very heartening to see our growth and happy to inform you that we have expanded that growth profile from 2 times the industry to 3 times the industry, near about 3 times the industry now, 35% over 12% of the industry growth in the pensions. We've touched, we're going to touch a very important milestone of 10% overall market share by end of this quarter in all likelihood and hopefully expand, quite fast after that. With that, I'm going to hand over to Vivek to cover financial performance. I'll turn it over to you for your questions.
Thank you, Srikant. On the overall financial performance, the revenue has gone up sequentially as well across all segments except the mortgage segment, which is non-core for us. Overall revenue growth year on year is about 33%, and same is for 9 months ended December. Even sequentially 3.4% growth. Across business lines, we have seen growth and with new client wins and addition of AUM. So one interesting phenomenon in mutual fund that we witnessed this time in this quarter is that although the mark to market was negative, while the net inflows remained positive and it compensated for the mark to market loss, resulting in a growth of AUM, which has benefited us in terms of the fee as well. So, the industry is doing well in terms of attracting fresh investment as well as SIP, strong SIP inflows, which is giving us better results. In terms of the various mix of the revenue, mutual fund revenue, fee-based revenue is 71%. The HUA solution business is 14%. The international and other industry solutions business is about 11%. Within that, the GFS is about 5%. AIF is about 5%. Pension and WebIL is about 2%. And the mortgage business, GBS, is about 2.7%. That's the breakup of the revenue mix that we have seen. And in terms of EBITDA margins, we remain strong. The last quarter that we have seen is again touched back to 45%, while the overall revenue continues to be in the range of 40 to 45% that we have been giving. Because of better performance on the overall segments, it continues to be in the range of 44 to 45%. The EBITDA margins, as I talked about, has seen a sequential dip of 10 bps, but that's more to do with some bit of seasonality that we have seen. Otherwise, in terms of the overall results, they are still 44.1%. PAT margins are PAT has also grown by about 35% year on year for the same quarter, and 44% for the 9 months. PAT margins are in the range of 31% for the quarter and 30.6% for the year. We remain cash positive. We have a dry powder of almost 570 crores sitting in cash and cash equivalents, which we will utilize as per the board policy for business expansion, M&A, and the board policy at the year end in terms of looking at dividend payout if the board considers that. The diluted EPS has gone up by 34% year on year, and for the 9 months it has gone up by 43%. We remain guided in terms of maintaining frugality on expenses, as some of the expenses have gone up during the quarter in terms of investment into IT and expansion, which we are cognizant of, and as Srikant mentioned, that we are looking at innovative ways of optimizing even IT expenses. Currently, we spend about 18% of our total revenue on IT, including people and new developments and new products. We continue to remain positive about the growth of the company across segments. Happy to take questions now.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and 1 on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and 2. Participants are requested to use handset while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Abhijeet Sakhare from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Hey, hi. Good morning, everyone. It's good to see the progress and the broad-based growth across verticals. So congrats on that. See, I have a question on the new businesses or the new deal wins. If it's possible to get a sense of, you know, the overall contract value, just so that we are better able to, you know, forecast growth going forward.
Hi, Abhijeet. Good morning. So I would probably, you know, prefer to have a separate conversation with Amit on that, given, you know, these are a number of deals. But broadly, to give you a picture, given some of these are, you know, license deals, you know, for example, our fund accounting platform, you'll have a little lumpy revenue on year one, and then about 25 to 30% as the AMC contract value, you know, pretty much in perpetuity after that. You know, some are deals that are won today, but revenue will kick in after, say, 2 months or 3 months, depending upon when it gets transitioned, so on and so forth. But and same is the case with the international too, right? So it would be a little, how do I put it? You know, it won't be appropriate to give a number or even a range, given the numbers, you know, would vary between which year you look at, right? But let me give you context of the international, the contract wins. On an average, the deal sizes earlier used to be, you know, anywhere about a crore or so, you know, per annum recurring, right, annuity. That deal size now, you know, if I average out the last six deals that we have signed, has now expanded to over nearly about 3 to 3.5, you know, crores, right? And the deals that we are now in the pipeline are closer to $1 million in terms of, you know, each deal, you know, that we are looking to work with.
Thanks, Shrinath. Just a follow-up, again, in terms of, you mentioned on the alternative space, there's mix of both TA and FA. So is it possible to give a, you know, realization across both these buckets?
So the TA opportunity, which, you know, so basically alternatives work slightly differently in comparison to mutual fund houses, right? Mutual fund houses are large, they have large vendor management teams, so on and so forth, and their preference of, you know, multiple different partners being there, one for transfer agency, one for data, one for fund accounting, one for order management system, etc. And that's the natural evolution of the mutual fund industry. In the case of alternatives, many of them are reasonably small, you know, fit-outs. They manage large AUMs, but reasonably small, you know, small fit-outs. And they prefer, you know, a single partner who has the ability to deliver all services. This is pretty much a global, you know, phenomenon as well. I mean, if you look at funds that are in, you know, any of the offshore locations, such as Luxembourg, Cayman, and so on and so forth, the fund administrator not just does transfer agency, but also does fund accounting, legal, part of legal aspects, and even some amount of board-related management solutions, so on and so forth. We have expanded our solutions to cover pretty much all of it, including, you know, partnerships with custodians and trustees, what have you. But a pure play TA deals are largely the ones that we initially started in 2021, right? And because in those days, even we didn't have the capability to render everything else. And those opportunities give us pair off anywhere about 1.5 to 2 basis points. Of late, pretty much almost every opportunity we enter into is a combination of transfer agency and fund accounting, a full solution stack, and that gets anywhere between 2.5 to 3 basis points.
Hey, thanks. That was helpful. Our last one is, if you could give us some outlook on the expense growth, at least, you know, what sort of a commitment expenses that are in the pipeline. Some of it, I mean, I think, would be linked to how the overall revenue will also pan out.
Sure. We have seen a reasonably sharp expansion in expenses this year, as you might have noticed from the P&L. And that is, you know, obviously one for significant expansion of the volumes that the industry had seen. Yes, there is a certain amount of mark-to-market, you know, growth-related revenue as well, but, you know, that pretty much tapered off in the last two quarters, you know, as quickly as it, you know, offered as any mark-to-market relief. So it is a symptom of expansion of headcount and the technological, you know, investments. Of course, the headcount does not go in the same proportion as, you know, the total volumes, but the tech costs can grow much faster than even the payroll component in India. And that's what we have seen in terms of our cloud costs expanding rapidly, which I continue to believe we will invest in our solutions to be cloud first. We have completed our journey of data movement into cloud. We are on course to move pretty much our entire application stack and API stack as well into the cloud. That provides us the scalability that is required and the nimbleness that is needed. So I do believe that the cost expansion was commensurate in case of mutual funds to the total growth of volumes. The other businesses, of course, are not as scaled as we all know. So wins in, say, the international and alternatives and, wealth and few others comes with a little bit more expense, to begin with, or at least let me put it this way, that, they're slightly margin dilutive in the initial years. And some of these have matured over the last 3-4 years, international especially, and alternatives is in the process of, maturing. So I believe that the cost expansion into the coming year, into April, which we obviously will, keep a very close watch, we will try to limit to about 10-odd%. And the CapEx is where, we continue to invest. We have spent over 75-odd crores already in terms of infrastructure. A large portion of this again is in hardware and some very tangible assets such as the web platform that we've created. So cash flows vis-a-vis CapEx, we are looking to be bringing in another 60 to 70 crores into the coming year.
That's it from Shrikant. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is on the line of Supratim Datta from Ambit. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for the opportunity. I have three questions. The first one on the BlackRock opportunity, and you laid out how there are 108 funds, and we would like to tap into that. But just wanted to understand, given BlackRock, 75% of their assets are in the US and Europe that they manage through Aladdin. Would this require you to acquire an asset there to access this opportunity, or could you do that with your current capabilities? And if if that requires an acquisition, then could you remind us again, what kind and what size of acquisition are you looking at? That would be the first question. Two, when I look at the other 8 partners, those are all large financial institutions like BNP Paribas, JP Morgan, Northern Trust. Now they provide, both custody, fund administration, TA services, all three stacks together. Then, as Jason, providing only TA and FA, how do you, what is your right to win against these players? Again, if you could give us some color on that, that would be very helpful. And lastly, keeping to the international business, we have seen that, there have been deals in the pipeline for Singapore for, last nearly 5 quarters, but, that hasn't really translated into the deal win. What is stopping us there, or when do we see this transitioning from pipeline to actual deal wins, particularly in Singapore? If you could let us know, that would be very helpful. Thank you.
Thanks, Supratim. Great question. So I'll start with the first one in terms of the operating model and the necessity to have a local structure for us to be able to service a client. The answer is it is not necessary, it's not mandatory. Just I'll bring your attention to the funds we currently managing, which are domiciled in Canada. We do not have any presence in Canada or anywhere in Europe at this moment in time, and we're able to render the solutions 100% from offshore. So while it is not a regulatory need, but it could be a client expectation, and that's understandable. But again, if you see our 70 odd clients that we have in these countries, we currently do not have, feet on street in Singapore, or in Hong Kong. We didn't have feet on street even in Thailand, actually, till we won the first contract. And same is the case with Philippines. We just hired, one person about 9 months back, whereas we've been servicing that country for almost 3.5 years now. So it's not a regulatory need, but it's always good to have some feet on street. And that's what definitely, we will be doing, right? As we scope out the opportunities and which is the right place, is it better to be in the location of the client, or is it better to be in the location where the other fund administrators are there? Because that is where largely the funds get transited from, which is largely the offshore location, so to speak. So those are the conversations we are having. And should there be a necessity to actually have a structure to be there, we will do it as we have recently done in Thailand and in Philippines. You must have noticed the approvals we received both from RBI as well as the local regulators for our expansion in Thailand and recently into the GIFT City as well. So to that extent, absolutely, you know, these are all in the realm of possibility. And for now, this is not a constraint for us to at least chase these contracts, so to speak. Second question in terms of, you're right, all the eight that you speak of are both banks and custodians and also FANTA. And what's our right to win? And this is a question that, you know, obviously we've asked ourselves not now 5 years back when we started our international journey as to how exactly are we going to compete with any of these global fund administrators where many of them happen to also render, you know, bank and custody solutions as well. And again, I'll just draw your attention. In India too, it was no different many years back, right? When many of these global funds came to India, you know, about 7-8 years back in India, we had, you know, Goldman Sachs, you got Morgan Stanley, you got Deutsche, you got Citi, you got several other global fund managers in India who also were banks, custodians, and an FATA providers, and they had captive setups, right? And it has happened over a period of time that the fund managers would realize the importance of having a specialized fund administrator solution provider, because that comes naturally to us. That is our forte, and that may or may not necessarily be the case with banks, you know, whose bigger revenue pie will always be the bank banking relationship and the custodial relationship. So our market study and the client study points to a significant dissonance in the fund managers when it comes to the services being rendered by the incumbents on the transparency and on fund accounting side. So what we have done in the past, and I'd like to believe we'll repeat the same success, is we are not a bank and a custodian, we won't be, but we can definitely stitch alliances, which is what we've done in many parts of Asia, and you know, which is something that we would replicate, I'm sure, as we move along, is having a partnership with custodians, right? So we have Deutsche Bank and Standard, who are our custodial and banking partners in Asia. We're working with HSBC to make it happen soon. Likewise, you know, we have done the same thing in GIFT City as well, and we will replicate the same model elsewhere. So that's pretty much, you know, how we look at this world. It's not a constraint. There are entities who may prefer to have, you know, one neck to choke, bank plus custody plus FA plus TA. But our market study points to, you know, that leading to a significant end investor dissatisfaction and regulatory non-compliances. But those are the ones that we, you know, take care of in a significantly better fashion, given that is pretty much the only thing that we do as a fund administrator here today. Right. So that's the second. Third, I think your question on Singapore and the pipeline in general. So again, great question, right? So we have focused in Asia to begin with, and within Asia, Malaysia, and then Philippines and Thailand. Singapore and Hong Kong happened largely because of our current delivery in Malaysia was liked very much by my current clients, and it is the same client who wanted us to deliver the services in Hong Kong and Singapore, which is what this is about. We've expanded to those countries. There is, however, one small hitch, which is that both the markets are not large mutual fund markets. They are predominantly alternatives market with significant amount of FII, FPI, private equity, you know, venture capital funds being the dominant asset class as against mutual funds there. And for that is why we had focused on developing our Exalts platform, which is basically a platform that is needed for multi-asset, multi-currency, multi-geography, which I already spoke about. Without that platform, I do not have a stake in the ground to win alternatives clients beyond India, correct? And that also explains to you, if you analyze all my 70 clients and 90 contracts international, barring the ones in Canada, they're all mutual fund you know, mandates. And hence, to move into Singapore and Hong Kong, it was the platform that was needed, and you know, it is built, it is ready. We are about to go live. But along the way, of course, you know, we were contemplating a buy versus build strategy, whether to do a acquisition and or directly, you know, launch our solutions in the form of alternatives. And both of those are in motion as we speak. So hopefully, you know, you will see both organic wins as well as maybe some you know, progress on the M&A as well.
Got it. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Madhukar Lada from Nuvama Wealth Management. Please go ahead.
Hi, so good morning and, you know, congratulations on a good set of numbers. Just on this international business opportunity, I remember, you know, a couple of quarters back, you had said that this could be a $25 million years' time. Now we've also added additional, you know, BlackRock, Aladdin capabilities. Would you want to revise that guidance with this new addition? What sort of, you know, incremental revenues could we see? That would be my main question. Thanks.
Good morning, Ankur. No, thanks again. A great question. I would love to answer in affirmation and probably give a number. What I can definitely do is the first one, which is to say, yes, I'd like to believe that, you know, it will be a much higher, you know, opportunity at scale. And that is the reason why we worked on this opportunity for such a long period of time. It's not very easy to be in that, you know, market list. And, you know, there was 18 months of due diligence that happened, significant, you know, engagement in that regard. Now, that said, I would be in a better position to answer this question mathematically, probably into the coming quarter, as I've just mentioned that, you know, we've signed the contract late December. And of course, you know, much of the U.S. and Europe, as you would know, you know, goes on vacation. They just came back. We had preliminary conversations with them. Into the coming, you know, 4 to 6 weeks, you know, we would have far more engagement to understand the process, the go-to-market, the market opportunity, and the ways to get there. And, you know, hopefully then put a number on it and then come back to market.
Just one more follow-up. You know, recently, Jio BlackRock announced that your competitor has been selected, you know, as the RTA in India. What's happening up there? I would have really thought that you having the Aladdin capability now would be a partner of choice given BlackRock, you know, it is Jio BlackRock. So what's happening? Maybe, you know, some color around, you know, why we didn't get that deal. That will also be helpful. Thanks.
Yeah, most definitely. So both of these were happening in tandem. In fact, our engagement on international on Aladdin, you know, started, as I said, 18 months back, whereas the local India-specific Jio asset management opportunity started, you know, much, much later, nearly almost 8 to 9 months of our engagement with the global partner, so to speak. And like every organization would have its mechanisms of, you know, risk diversification in terms of, you know, where they would want to engage with a partner versus somewhere else. And both BlackRock and us felt we had a much larger opportunity to work on the international side of it. And Aladdin, of course, whilst it is a global platform, that is not the platform that, you know, today any of the asset managers, you know, are using in India. So that wasn't a strength or a deterrent in any form and shape. This was a decision made, you know, largely in the context of, you know, where the opportunity size and the capabilities exist, and they wanted to take, you know, diversify the risk in terms of working with the partners.
Understood. Thank you, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shrija Pathak from JK Capital Management. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for giving me the opportunity. The pretext of my question has really got to do with the market performance over the past couple of months. We know that it's been muted. So just looking at your year-on-year AUM growth, is there a possibility where you can maybe give the contribution from the market performance versus the SIP inflow or the other inflow that is coming to all these fund houses? So I'm trying to get this to maybe next year when if the market or FY25, when the market doesn't perform well, and maybe we won't see the AUM growth coming from the market, but maybe from the SIP inflows that are coming in. So yeah, just given on that, if you could just give the contribution.
Sure. Thank you. Thanks for that. Very, very important question in the context of what, is probably looking like a cyclical slowdown of India's economy now. I just draw attention to Q3 in terms of how it panned out and a little bit of, you know, insights into what's happened over the last 3 weeks in this very month itself. And, you know, how possibly we can extrapolate that into the coming quarters, if I may, right? I mean, Q3, as Vivek had already called out, there was a mark-to-market correction by over 4.5% over Q2. And however, that got compensated by higher net flows. The net flows in Q3 were 20% higher as compared to Q2 of this fiscal year. But of course, you know, more volume, I mean, more net flows means more, you know, volumes and more transactions, and obviously this will be coming through costs associated with that. So in Q3, despite a mark-to-market slowdown, the MF industry and ergo us, you know, who are, you know, who are basically the administrators in that area, you know, still continue to grow, albeit at a smaller pace, and I guess the momentum dropped to the just about 3.5% quarter on quarter. Though our businesses, we believe it is more a year-on-year story as against quarter on quarter story always. If I look at the first 3 weeks of this year, we continue to, so there's another close to 4% drop in mark to market. And we continue to see a reasonably commensurate decline in AUM in this quarter, which effectively points to this very simple fact that the net inflows haven't been strong enough to offset the mark-to-market correction that has happened. Now, this can be, you know, attributed to a little bit of slowness in market mobilization and or a little bit of caution being exhibited by the retail investors. But 3 weeks is not a definitive amount of time for anyone to take, you know, to make any kind of conclusion. You know, it's definitely into the next, you know, 4 to 6 weeks we will get to know. But by and large, the investor behavior has been, you know, has undergone a paradigm shift in India. With markets, when they're down, there has been more mobilization of money coming into the industry and hence offsetting, you know, the impact of mark-to-market. I hope it'll continue. And obviously many key drivers, including the upcoming budget, so on and so forth, will probably will have some role to play in terms of how we see this to evolve. But we are at the moment a little cautious in terms of you know, how to project the overall AUM growth into the next year.
Okay, I have a follow-up question to that. So, say just taking the worst case possible, the market doesn't do well, the inflow really slows down. What is your sensitivity? What is your revenue sensitivity to such conditions?
Yeah, great question. And you know, this is the genesis of you know, our entire journey over the last 5 years, which is risk diversification. If not move away, but at least you know, reduce the reliance on one asset class, mutual funds, and one geography, India, and hence the dependency in the mark-to-market. Right. So our diversification meant that we moved close to about 35% of our revenue profile to come from other avenues, and we want to get it to about 50% in some time to come. But in the near term, when of course we continue to have near about 65% of our revenue bearing to equity, within that, equity mutual funds is roughly about, you know, 55-odd%, close to 60%, if I may, as the asset class generating the commensurate amount of revenue. Clearly, if there is a significant drop with no offset happening in the form of net flows, we will have probably adverse impact anywhere between 4 to 5% decline in revenue sequentially, so to speak. But on an year-on-year basis, you know, we should still be doing all right in the context of a significant expansion of AUMs starting from Q2 of this fiscal year.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Pradut Shah from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for the opportunity. So, Srikant, one question on your wealth management proposition. Could you presume, because I think a lot of these clients, at least to our larger wealth managers in India, also work with you on the AIF piece or the domestic RTA piece. So, exactly how will this particular proposition differ from the TA and FA services that you're already providing? That is one. Second is just data giving one. I think on your sequentially, if I look at the international other investor solutions business, the revenue growth has been relatively weaker as compared to the AUM growth. So was that largely because there was some lumpy transition revenues last quarter which weren't there at this time? And last question, I think someone asked earlier, but I'm not sure if to address that. Like any update on a potential international acquisition? Thank you. Those were my questions.
Sure. Thank you. So the first one in terms of the Empower Wealth, the wealth platform, you know, we've launched. See, the asset management solution, largely transfer agency, which is managing your investor side, the liabilities of your book, right? Investor onboarding and then the, you know, creation of units and destruction of the units as redemption happens, so on and so forth. That is a full-fledged, you know, operations activity. It is our platform, it is our service, so on and so forth. In the case of wealth, it is different because, you know, when you come to a wealth manager, you would be, you know, selling both your own captive funds, but also third-party funds, right? And that can be any asset classes. In the case of, you know, mutual funds, RTA, it is only mutual funds we deal with. But if you are a wealth manager for a particular investor who could be the client, your portfolio can be spread across a direct equity, PMS, alternatives, insurance, international exposure, maybe even, you know, cryptos, what have you, right? So it is a, every single asset class gets rolled into it. And from our solution standpoint, it is a platform that we need to provide to the wealth team, which means that the relationship managers rolled up to the overall wealth organization and how they acquire and service their clients, sell various different products and create a portfolio and provide the engagement solutions in terms of how they work with the investors in terms of portfolio reconstruction, providing the right kind of MIS analytics, so on and so forth, and also provide a platform for the investor to see their own you know, wealth movement, if I may. So this is a very, very different solution, right, as compared to the TA, which is very, very specific to that one asset class, of that one specific asset management company and the deep down operations of it. Whereas here, we have this particular platform and the processes operate one level above, which means that it is possible your portfolio may have all the 45 mutual funds, you know, 50 portfolio management services, 10 alternate investment funds, cryptos, what have you. So it's a different construct altogether. I hope that clarifies that.
Just one follow-up. How do the revenues in this particular segment pay? Is it on the basis of the AUMs that the fund manager manages, or is there a fixed fee for using a platform?
So we got both models. You know, we obviously work with, in most cases, it is a full service model, which means that it's our platform, our service, and we underwrite all the risk associated with that, much like in the case of mutual funds. And hence, to be a true partner to underwrite the risk and not just give the platform, we charge basis points. So in wealth too, there are, you know, various places where it is fully our people, our processes, our risk management, our platform, and hence there is basis points. But in situations where a client may want, and this happens largely with banks, if I may, and they may want, they already have a wealth practice, but what they want is, you know, far better platform, either, you know, to replace the current one or to create a new one, in which event it is largely going to be implementation cost followed by license fee, you know, either specified model or on the AMC model subsequently.
Understood.
Your other questions in terms of, I think...
So were there any lumpy revenues on the international and other investor solutions last quarter which weren't there this time?
Short answer is absolutely yes. We, in the last quarter, if you recollect, I've announced a deal called Aman Raya Investment Managers, one of the larger deals we have signed, a very large sovereign fund in Malaysia. And that gave us a little bit of lumpy revenue in that one quarter. And the revenue recognition of that deal staggers across multiple quarters. And the component of the Q1 was higher, but as we move into the Q4, you know, some of such revenue would come. So that was an interim, you know, a slight dip in that lumpy revenue, if I may.
Got it.
I just want to add to what Srikanth mentioned. See, in international business, especially in Southeast Asia, it takes 18 to 24 months to win a client. And then there is a license revenue and there is a recurring revenue. So, you know, looking at it on a quarter-on-quarter basis will not give you an immediate answer. While the overall non-MF revenue grew by 2%, the GFS international business grew by 8%, which was a combination of increase in AUM and new client win revenues. So you'll have to watch it quarter after quarter and then, you know, look at the growth in this business. And the wealth business client wins that Srikanth talked about, we haven't yet even clocked the revenue into the P&L. These are client wins which will go live. So that's another reason that, you know, one quarter may not be a correct reflection of the revenue which is in the client win pipeline, which will clock in the coming quarters.
So when would these revenues start getting built into the, from the wealth piece?
Wealth revenue will start coming in from next quarter. I mean, in GFN.
Okay, understood. Thanks, Vivek.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Uday Pai from Investec. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. I just wanted some more color on the custodian partnership that you mentioned with Sun Life. Could you please share more details on that? And do you think you have, you know, opportunities to make such other partnership in other geographies as well? That's the only question I had. Thank you.
Sure. I'll just clarify one point. With Sun Life, it's not a custodial partnership, it's a contract we have won from Sun Life Custody, right? So Sun Life is an AMC in Philippines, and they also are a custody. We have won the contracts to render one directly to Sun Life as an AMC. Second, the other AMCs that today Sun Life Custody provides the custodial services, and that is about four or five more asset management companies that scope is getting, you know, discovered. And so to that extent, you know, it is working with them and their clients. And it is a similar situation with the other LOI we received in Malaysia, which is again with another custodial services who have multiple other AMCs whom they currently support and service. The custodial partnerships we have are largely with Standard Chartered and Deutsche Bank. And as I said, you know, we are working with other large bank-based custodians as well in that part of the world and outside of, you know, Asia as well. And those partnerships help us with one or two ways. One, should there be an RFP that states that the AMC is looking at a single partner to provide bank custody, fund accounting, and transfer agency work together, then we have a joint go-to-market strategy, which is, you know, it would be both of us together, and then hence, you know, you meet the criteria of the RFP. Second, as these custodians add layers of AMCs, largely from FA standpoint, we become the natural partner for them to add transfer agency services while they continue to be the principal. Okay, I hope that clarifies that.
Sure, sir. Thanks. That was very useful.
The next question is from the line of Dipanjan Ghosh from Citi. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, sir. So just a few questions. First, you know, going back to the BlackRock Aladdin partnership. You know, while you know, you mentioned the opportunity side in terms of the number of clients and AUMs managed on the Aladdin platform. Just want to understand, in terms of the eight partners who are already existing, would you have done some due diligence on the revenue clocked by these partnerships till now, be it a BNP, Stanley, and the eight put together, what would be the revenue pool sitting out there? Second, if you can quantify the Hexagram revenues for the quarter or maybe 9 months. And lastly, on the issuer solutions business, you mentioned that there can be some volatility in yields depending on the underlying, you know, holdings pattern. So if you can give some clarification on that, that will be great.
Sure. The first one, in terms of, you know, the alignment we have, we don't know, at a, you know, individual administrator level, as each of those administrators not just leverage Aladdin to provide solutions, but they also have their own potential captive in-house platforms. They would also be working with many other platforms, industry platforms such as Charles River and, you know, Advent, sorry, Geneva by Advent, and, you know, there are a few more platforms out there in the world, right? So their revenue obviously will be a combination of several other items, and hence we can't simply add up their revenues and see, you know, how much of that is coming from there. But what I can What our understanding is, we look at largely from the standpoint of the yield that they derive, and that is still largely in the form of conversations we have with potential fund managers, and largely we figure that out either doing NDRs that we do and or through market intelligence. And that was the right to win that we've had, which is that many of these administrators charge nearly 2 to 2.5 times the basis points that we charge here in India. And these are much larger asset sizes too, right? I mean, like, for example, a typical alternate investment fund in India could be about 3,000 crores or 4,000 crores of AUM, but most of the funds out there run into billions of dollars. And even at that asset value, the basis points is nearly 2 to 3 times larger than what we charge today. So our right to win is to be able to provide far compelling, value at much lower cost structures. So I guess in some way, if you were to just do a macro versus macro calculation of it, probably, put 6 or 7 basis points and multiply with that $11 trillion is largely probably going to be the addressable market in timing, right? But as I said, we will need to have far more engagement with the entities into the coming, months. We will understand as to, what is the definitive revenue possible, but that could be the addressable market from a top-down approach. I think there was another question about...
The issuer solution,
the point I was trying to make is, we manage, close to about 7,000, odd clients, right, and about 650 odd listed and the rest unlisted companies. The folio yield levels, just like in the case of mutual funds yield, even the folio also has a certain yield, and the pricing of folios varies by different clients, right? And that becomes a market negotiated rate, could be various factors, including the number of retail folios to the quantum of business we get versus multiple other things. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that as the quarters and months go, you will have, certain stocks performing very well, certain stocks not performing very well. And as that happens, the folio, that is the retail participation in each of these companies also varies. Right. For example, you may have a very large, conglomerate whose, value may come down by 20-25% on account of poor results or anything. And then you may see a market sort of retail, investors from that to some other company. Now, if that happens, obviously, the number of folios comes down and so does my revenue associated with that. And it is possible that one particular company's yield that I derive could be, when I say yield, I mean portfolio cost, could be higher or lower compared to the average that I have. And hence, there is a fluctuation even at a folio level in terms of the yield we derive. That's what I was referring to.
Got it. On the hexagram revenue, if you can quantify that.
Sure. Vivek, would you want to take that?
Yeah, so Hexagram had a revenue of about 9.5 crores for 9 months ended December, versus about 6 crores for the same period last year. So it's a 60% plus growth year on year.
Got it. And just one question. So in your opening commentary, you mentioned that you want to take up the international solutions business revenue to around 15%. Did I hear it correctly?
No. I mentioned that non-mutual fund revenue, which includes all others, our aim is to bring that to 50% of the total book.
Got it. Okay, sure. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraint, that was the last question for today's conference call. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Divesh Agarwal for the closing comments.
On behalf of IIFL Capital, I thank the KFin management for giving us an opportunity to host the call today. Before we conclude, Vivek, would you like to add any closing remarks?
Thanks, Vivesh. I think there is nothing more. We have already covered the details. We continue to remain buoyant about the various businesses in terms of the growth potential. And we do expect that, the market will remain supportive, especially the net inflows as we see in the new SIP hits that are coming through. The behavior of the retail investors and the tokenization of the mutual fund ticket size that the regulator is attempting to garner more AUM will certainly help in terms of the AUM industry. Our efforts in terms of international expansion with the approval of Thailand and GIFT City are opening up more doors for us to expand into geographies as we look at even Singapore and Dubai in times to come to set up our offices. And we actively remain engaged in evaluating M&A targets so that the growth can be fast-tracked. And, you know, overall, the EBITDA margins will remain in the range of 40 to 45% that we have been maintaining. That's all from our side. Thank you so much for joining today.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, everyone, for joining in today. Steve, you may now conclude the call.
On behalf of IIFL Capital Services Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.